And a very good morning to you. This is the Monday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us by calling 434-1790. You can send a message to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net, or you can send a WhatsApp message to 266-IVOB. Dennis Johnson, I'll be your host until 1 o'clock today. I know it's rather rainy outside, but the guys insist that there will be sports. So, sports there will be. And, of course, we'll be covering BSAC as we usually do from 1 to 2. From time to time, I see and hear comments about the gender wars, and males would call, and there's a gentleman who calls whenever he hears the public relations officer from Now on the radio who calls and usually challenges what she says. I've stayed away from gender wars because I have mixed emotions and mixed feelings about the battle of the sexes. But I was reading something in the Sunday Sun that caused me to decide to make a comment, and I'm going to stick my foot deep in the doo-doo because I'm sure there are people who will have things to say about what I say. Perhaps they won't, but anyway, several things on my mind, but this one stuck. The comments attributed to Madam Justice Jacqueline Cornelius addressing the Rotary Club of Barbados was in the Sunday Sun, page 8A. And the parts of the story that stuck with me were these parts. The first one said, while acknowledging that women had made great strides in education advancement, she, meaning Madam Justice, suggested, research showed this achievement did not bring financial rewards or occupational prestige. I am sure that must be a misquote, because Madam Justice, along with Madam Justice Mary McCormack, the several other female jurists across the Caribbean, I don't think they get paid less than their male counterparts, and I don't think that they're any less acknowledged or get less respect or have less occupational prestige because they're females. I can think of Kamala Prasad Besasar in Trinidad and Tobago. I can think of Dame Eugenia Charles in Dominica, Portia Simpson Miller in Jamaica. And their female prime ministers held the office. I don't think it was any less prestigious because they were females. I don't think they made less than their male counterparts. I would be shocked if they did. I'm sure all the, what's known as what, the exigencies of the office were accorded them. Dame Nita Barrow in Barbados, Dame Hilda Bino in Grenada, Dame Paulette Luisi in St. Lucia, and our own Dame Sandra Mason were governors general throughout the region. Trinidad is set to appoint a female president. I don't get the comment. These are prestigious offices held by females, and I'm sure they were accorded all the courtesies of the office. The other comment was, oftentimes, when there is a recession, you'll see, and sometimes before, that unemployment rates for women exceed those for men, and that is throughout the Caribbean. Again, context. If I set up a company called Get Clean Barbados, and I employ 300 females and 100 men, if the company closes, there'll be more unemployed females than males. So one has to put these comments into context. Are there more females employed in certain jobs and organizations that when they close, the rates of unemployment among females go up? In isolation, the comments don't make much sense. That's my piece on the gender war. There are other things I want to chat on, but I'll let you have your say before I, you know, delve into the rest of what's been on my mind, because it's been a while since I sat in this chair. And I should be joined by technical operator, producer Graham Vaughan, and I hope we'll continue to have this discussion. So if you come straight on to me, that's because I'm manning the fort, so to speak. So Thank you for waiting. Good morning. This is Dr. Brass Dacks.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Ma'am, how are you?
I'm a bit of a cough, but other than that, I'm doing quite well.
Okay.
I want to, well, my comments were to be directed to education.
Okay. Good place to go.
Right. I just wanted to give some thanks to the media for the work that they do. Sometimes it is like a teaching profession, as they say, a thankless job. But to keep us informed is very important. I cry for my country. As an educator or a former educator, they say you never stop being an educator. I am appalled at what is happening within our schools. It is not the small amount of students, but it is that this violence is happening and escalating because we know the majority are doing well. I submitted many years ago on a program on the television station in Barbados that the school system needed to be revamped. And my comment was based on two things. Having been part of the system, I taught from nursery to tertiary. Having seen people fall out of the system and others do well. And reading and understanding one of my favorite psychologists, a man whose name is Howard Gardner. Gardner spoke often of multiple intelligences. He wrote several books, and I'm now reading Five Minds for the Future. The essence was that we would normally rate on the Gaussian curve or the bell-shaped curve because it is seen that if you are able to do this and so on, you're intelligent or you're in the intelligence ratio or quotient, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Your IQ is high.
IQ was
for those
basically.
Who, yeah.
But the danger, and I think that is where Howard was going with his thesis, the danger in doing that, and I'm going to speak to the common entrance examination and other examinations, the danger of doing that is that pen and pencil tests can skew your intellect and give a false reading, and I'll tell you why. A lot of children do lessons, and they applaud teachers who support children who may be having challenges. But May's Miracle, that was shown as a documentary many, many years ago of an autistic boy whom she adopted, was an eye-opener for me. And essentially it was this. She took this child who couldn't see and so on and couldn't speak, obviously, as he should and so on. She kept him and nurtured him. Every day she would put him by the radio, and the radio was turned to classical music. One day, there was a piano in the room, and she heard classical music being played. She said she wondered if she had turned the radio on and had forgotten, but it wasn't time. And went in and saw her autistic child playing Chopin and Bach. I made that comment to say, my submission those many years ago was simply this. If you understand the principle of multiple intelligences, which essentially is saying that it's not just one intelligence, you can have logic, mathematical, you can have spatial intelligence, which gives the dancers and artists and so on that ability, visual artists, performing artists, to see things. You have linguistic intelligence. There are people whose language skills are off the charts. And they go into the fields and areas that they will do well. Mm-hmm. Now, we do not understand because, as I said, I worked with children and adults. And I saw the deficiencies. And my simple premise was this. If our schools were structured to fit the needs and aptitudes of the child, by the time they reach secondary school and other schools, you wouldn't be arguing every year about who's brilliant, because the other thing I contended was that if everybody was at the intellectual level of genius, and they go into certain schools, all of them should have scholarships and exhibitions. But it does not happen. So my submission at that time, and I still maintain today, there are children in this country and adults who are challenged. There are simple things like phonetic awareness. There are children who don't hear sounds, either the initial or medial or end sounds. There are some who have no phonetic awareness at all. The parents don't read. They don't have. I knew a boy who was 16 years old, cursed by a cat, and it shocked me. No phonetic awareness. Now I'm going to come back to something, and please, I don't want to seem political. My comment is basically to say this. There are children who are suffering, and I say suffering, I use that term advisedly, because they have dyscalculia, dyspraxia, dyslexia, autism. I taught a child who had Asperger's. His mother spoke with me in the recent past. He's now a young man. And she thanked me because I took the time to understand this child. And she said to me, he was only diagnosed recently, and he has to be in his late 20s. But he was called all kinds of names, unfortunately, by some of my colleagues. I come to this point, and I'm very hurt and upset about the comment made about demons and that children are demons. If a child has an environment that either does not stimulate or help to nurture those multiple intelligences, if he goes into a school environment from the time he is young and he's marginalized, ostracized, because he can't get a 90 in math, if then that child has other variables impacting his performance, a broken home, and I'm talking poverty here, because broken homes can come in any place.
Including two parent families. Yeah.
That's correct. You have the other variables, and they are real. They are introduced to video violence through games. When you penetrate the mind, you know they say a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Mm-hmm. If you infiltrate your mind with that all day and night, it affects your thinking and your psyche. In addition to that, you have, we don't want to say it, but we have the drug lords and others who are wreaking havoc on this country. Up to last night, another young man lost his life. If you look at the composite, if you look at this thing in a comprehensive way, you have to take corrective action. You cannot bury your head in the sand like an ostrich. So when you have all of these variables impacting our young people, I had an example to share, and I can't take up much of your time, sir, but I thank you. There was a young lady who was a university student who stayed here with me. And one night she came from, I think it was the Bahamas. She came here a bright and beautiful young lady. One night she said she was going to study. I said, okay. And I used to take her up to class and I would talk to her. And so on. I said, I taught at the university part-time and so on. But I always entreat you to be wise. The last time I saw that young lady was a Saturday night. A gentleman, an oldest gentleman, came in the taxi. I saw her again. I said, all right. By the next time I saw her, she was in the hospital. A tooth broken out. In what do you call it? A teddy or whatever. And I went into shock. I had spoken with her father. I had the care of this young lady. That's what I felt. I said, what happened? She went on something called a bus crawl. I don't know what ensued. But by the time I got to the hospital, she was in there. I said, you know, you could have been killed. What happened? Whatever happened, I know she was in a state of drunkenness. Do I know what happened? And they threw her on the pavement back at the university. Now, Mr. Johnson, I am asking the powers that be in this country to stop burying their heads in the sand. Look at educational reform. You cannot stop somebody bringing school a knife. Get metal detectors in the school. We have been asking for that for over 20 or 30 years. This is not a new thing. It has escalated. You are asking people to send their children into environments, to send teachers and ancillary staff into hostile environments, war zones, I call them, and you are not giving them the means of survival? Another comment was made by a member of the House of Assembly, and I was appalled. You are telling people, a country that has had free and fair elections, and I have voted from the time I was 18 years old, I intend to vote. You stand in the House of Assembly and tell people of this country that this election is going to be bloody? What are you telling me? Why make such a ludicrous statement? You cannot tell me that those persons who stand in authority and leadership positions in this country, demonizing people's children when they know better, speaking ill over them and telling the populace you are going to, the police will crack your heads and shoot. What kind of mirror image do these people have? Our children watch us. And if we do not set the right standards, and if we fail to do the corrective things, it doesn't take much to revamp.
Ma'am, I want to thank you for your presentation, and I let you go through it uninterrupted because of your association with the profession and, of course, your passion for change. A couple of comments I would make that I think is going to take more than just government action or even civil society on its own to change. One is the desire of parents to force their children to be a reflection of what they, the parents, want to be or wanted to be or want their children to be, as opposed to what their children are capable of being. And I think the challenge that you will face is that there are people who do not understand your presentation on different types of intelligence. There are people who believe that music, the playing of music, has no effect on the mind. They think that people who send their children to piano lessons or send their children swimming or engage in some other type of intellectual stimulation do so because they're rich and can afford it. We live on an island. We're surrounded by water. And there are people who don't swim, don't know how to swim, and won't take their children swimming because they see it as being, you know, something that they're not capable of doing. They don't understand that that type of activity can be a stimulus. You can use it as a tool to clear your mind and to be able to work. I saw Graham Vaughan, technical operator, producer, shaking his head when you mentioned video games. I had a challenge with that as well, especially the violence associated with some video games. And I was given a child's correction by a young man who was very involved in it. I told him the creator of the video game that I saw him with, the company was called Idol Minds, IDOLMINDS, and I thought that was a corrupting influence to begin with, just the name. The challenge we face with our children, we have to accept the fact that it's our problem to fix, and I mean each and every one of us. And I don't think as a nation, I don't think as parents, we are open enough yet to say, this is where I have failed, this is what I need to do to correct some of what's happening. So we find someone else to blame. And it happens a lot. And unfortunately, until we have gotten to the stage where we can see that having a child does not make you a parent, I said at a men's forum that I don't believe in DNA testing because DNA testing will tell you who made the woman pregnant. It won't make her unmake me a father. And yeah. So there are things like that we have to live with. And the anger of parents manifested in many ways. is too part and parcel of this problem. So it's not a fixing the child problem, which is what we're looking at. But I thank you for your comments on this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I'm joined by Tamekia Skeet as well as production assistant. So I have a full team today. There must be a reason for it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Dennis.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, and you?
Yeah, pretty good. No, I wanted to call this morning to say that a call was made by the Minister of Education that parents should carry their children to church. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good call, but not coming from Mr. Ronald Jones. Because when I look at his track record over a period of time, I don't think that he has that spiritual authority.
Sir, I would warn you, don't go there, please. Don't go there, all right? My caution to you, sir, is to go, don't go there. I have tried to caution you people who make these statements on more than one occasion. You do not have the authority to pass judgment on what someone can or cannot do. Maybe your personal opinion, but you have to be careful how you articulate that personal opinion, okay? You're going to slide on a banana peel on that one, sir. 4341790, Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I want to say this. Very good morning to the panel.
There isn't a panel, sir. I by myself.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
No. What else?
No.
I am 25 years old. I went to school not so long ago. I would say left school a short while ago. Uh-huh. And I've heard all the points that everybody would have made. But I'll say this. I went to UE. I graduated. I got first class honors. And I traveled on the minibuses as well. I had a few friends that were rowdy. But apart from that, what I agree with most is the point you made about the swimming. Mm-hmm. I played cricket and football and tennis and many other sports from my school.
Right.
And those things pretty much kept me going. And you had good positive influences of your coaches, your peers around you.
And it teaches you to work with people who sometimes you don't like, but you have to work as a team.
That's very true. That's a very good point. A few of us never got along very well.
Never, as far as I know. I saw it a lot, yeah.
But we made it work when it came to representing the school at the point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say this. Everyone has a mind of their own. Even though you might come from a rough environment. I mean, my environment when I was younger was not the best at first. But after a while, my parents were, let me say, lucky enough to provide a better home and a better environment. But I still have my friends, if I'm being honest, I still have my friends from that environment, and we still talk, we still communicate. They may see me once in a while, and they may say, well, can you give me a little drink or whatever? It will still assist and see if we could provide some form of positive input. I think it's just a situation where we need to look at the all-round aspects of everything. I find into school sports and stuff, I don't see as much people running as when I was going to school. I don't see as much people involved in positive activity. And I kind of think that Barbados does not take the sporting arena as serious as it should, because mm-hmm. that's a very viable option to bring in foreign exchange. I mean, have the cricketers know who's going to play the IPLs, the CPLs, and make millions of dollars and bring it back to Barbados with them. Mm-hmm. You have athletics, which is very popular. If you could have some more athletes winning some gold medals and putting us on the market, you may have tennis with Darian King. There are many options out there for young people who may not be that academically inclined to make something of themselves. And even if you're not academic, everybody cannot be a doctor, lawyer, bank manager. And I find in these times, we seem to be only praising people who are able to be doctors, lawyers, bank managers, and come up with great academic success. If you only have doctors, lawyers, and bank managers, who's going to build homes, who's going to fix the electricity pole, who's going to be a carpenter? And those are stuff that I think we need to look at all around. We seem to be lacking in the fact that we just look at one particular section of life. We need to look at it holistically. And children coming up, whether they're between the ages of 3 and between the ages of 16, they're still impressionable. So you need to let somebody know, apart from, if I cannot be that academically inclined, maybe better at something else. And that's something I have always said from school. There's some children who may not be the best at math and English and biology, but they may be good at metalwork, PD, technical drawing. And I think that those children, even in my time when I was going to school, were neglected and made to feel like they were not on the same level as the other children who were excelling at advanced math and physics and chemistry. And that's just something that I wanted to put out there. We need to look at it holistically. I won't say the education system needs a complete reform, but those are just things that we need to look at.
So let me say to you, just hold on for a second. I want you to finish this conversation with me because I like where it's going. Let me say this to you. I have found it interesting whenever people talk about academically inclined, because I personally believe we all are academically inclined. We just find a different way to get there. I didn't like geometry because I couldn't figure out what the square on the hypotenuse is equal to the square on the other two sides meant or what it had to do with me. I couldn't figure it out. It had nothing to do with me. Okay? So I drew nice diagrams and left them there. And when people ask me about Pythagoras' theorem, I say it made Pythagoras crazy. It's not going to drive me crazy. Okay? But eventually I passed maths because I was shown the practical application of fulcrum and balance and all that thing. I didn't like geography, but I used to sail from age 7, and I learned about wind speed and wind direction, and that's part of geography. I just wasn't interested in sedimentary rock and igneous rock. I know rock, big rock, they pelt at somebody when they get your vex. But the point is this. I made the comment to the guys in Spice and Company, Dean Straker and company, just last week on the beat. A lot of musicians in Barbados, well-known musicians, went to Harrison College. They went to Harrison
That's
College. Nicholas Blanca, come back down or go back up, whichever you want to. Okay? Well-known names, big in music. They got a wall in Harrison College with who was prime minister, who was governor general. I see one who were the musicians.
That's correct.
They tell me it's in the music room. But why doing it in the music room? Why not outside? I didn't go in the music room. I went driving through Harrison College. Right? My thing is this. You have produced some of the finest musicians in Barbados who've worked with big international names who are recognized for what they do. You know, Nicholas Scott right. Grammy, okay? I mean, where's the wall? But, you know, so my thing is, even in the highest of institutions where people got there because of their academic achievement, they found their fulfillment somewhere else. And to me, it is, I mean, Janis Milton was a genius. Where is the recognition for the work she's done? Fellow sitting across from me plays a musical instrument because of Miss Millington. But I am saying Steel Pan. Steel Pan started in the gutters in Trinidad, but it lifted men who had nothing to do, who were fighting with one another and chopping up one another, pelting bottles at one another, to brush up on themselves and find another way to express their anger and their disappointment at being in the ghetto. It is not that we have to look somewhere for examples. They're all around us. And you talk about sports. Beach cricket, kicking football on the beach, playing on the pasture. It's expending energy. It's learning, you know, I mean, there are ways in which you can teach someone the academic side of things, other than putting them in a classroom and writing on a board. Or even, I mean, once upon a time, they used to, you have to go to school to learn to type. You know, women used to go to school to learn to type. I see fellas on laptops, iPads, typing at speeds in excess of any female I know, and they ain't go to type in school. So where they learn it from? And they're not looking at the keyboard either. And they're not using one finger. So
yeah, apart from that,
they've learned other ways to master the art.
That's true. But I will also say this. I'm not sure if some of the teachers from before have moved on or retired, but when we were going to school, teachers were very, very involved.
Yep.
And the reason I say that was I was not always on the straight and narrow.
Me neither.
you're in a couple of fights, you're a boy, you do some foolish things. At the end of the day, the teacher will come and speak to you sternly and say, well, what you just did was not right, so and so and so and so. Mm-hmm. It was no need to call my mother or father. The teacher spoke to me.
Sometimes
they
do. Listen, sir, I knew one teacher in particular. If he ever caught you fighting, he would say, after school, meet me by the tuck shop. And you turn up with two boxing gloves, throw one at you, put on one and see how I come. You want to fight? Take me on. He was a short fellow, about 4'9½", but boy, he used to punch real hard. And the bigger you were, the more he wanted to punch you. And I don't think anybody ever gave him trouble. He was a loved teacher.
That is very true. And we miss that. I would say this. I also went to school in the time of math. And I would say he was brilliant. In my eyes, he was strict, but he still understood how to deal with children and deal with situations.
Yeah.
And he was one of my favorite teachers. Even though he was just a PE teacher, he was still one of my favorite teachers at school. And I remembered in fourth form, I stopped down. It's not something that I am proud of, but it's not something that made me ashamed either. I was in a class where I did chemistry, biology, and physics. My mother wanted me to do that.
No, you didn't.
So I did a third form. I got through fairly well, but again, a fourth form, not when it comes to the SBAs, but I got cricket on a Saturday and cricket on a Friday, football. I can't deal with this anymore. But they made me repeat in fourth form. Everybody thought it was end or tell, but I was like, that's great, because they didn't want to do that anymore. I went into a class. We did history, law, geometry, English literature, English language. I did most of the, we call it arts class, right. Arts and language.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a grand time. Came first in class every year since then. Got 8 CSEs, did my A-levels, went on to UV, and it was great. But that's the same thing I was saying before. My mother then understood. I said, no, I want to be a doctor.
You didn't want to be a doctor. Fair enough. I hope she's proud of whatever you are today, sir.
Yeah. She very much is. I'm an insurance consultant. I do very well for myself. But I'm just saying that apart from all the fashion flashiness and fame that everybody has to say about my son is a doctor, a lawyer. I know some very good carpenters out there, some very good masons, some very good mechanics. And I'm saying, oh, these are things that people should be proud of to become. And apart from that, the reason I mention sports is, sports is an avenue out to anything. Yep. Don't care what happens. There's sports scholarships given away all over Barbados. And everybody comes to Barbados looking for talent.
Yep. I'm glad you said so, sir, and I hope they heard you. Thank you very much for your contribution. Brass Dex, good morning.
A very good morning to you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Greetings and salutations to your good self. Mr. Johnson, there are two important things that happen in this month of February. To me, personally speaking, Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent, which reminds me of the greatest operas in musical history, are Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, 1786, Don Giovanni, 1787, and The Magic Flute, 1791. His last composition, written under the shadow of death, was the Requiem Mass, a work of tragic beauty. However, sir, my favorite still remains composer Beethoven. The question may be asked, why not Mendelssohn, Tchaikovsky, Schubert, Verdi, Bachsorf, or Wagner? I deliberately mention these composers due to the fact that we are always having a request for our local music to be played on our radios. But how can we play what we don't have? We cannot make reference to noise as music, sir. But the chief reason why I've mentioned Beethoven this morning, as we are promoting Black History, please be reminded as we celebrate Black History Month, it appears today that some historians can't come to reality and they still fail to believe that Beethoven was a Negro, member of the dark skin race, native of Africa. I know the definition of aristocrat. I know the definition for a diplomat. But not being privileged to be in possession of the late Dr. Allsup's dictionary, can you be so kind as to please explain to me what is a Negro quad?
Sir, it was a term coined by a former prime minister. I got a number somewhere, but he perhaps is the best person to explain it to you. I wouldn't like to tell you who I thought he was referring to when I first heard it, but it matched the description of someone that I had in my mind. Turned out that's not who he was referring to, though. We create terms all the time. He liked creating terms. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson.
Morning, sir.
What I am looking at this morning is the disturbance among the young people today.
Mm-hmm.
And I am thinking that in each community there should be a family teaching project with particularly pastors and priests involved. Invariably they will have churches in the area and have some knowledge of some of the young people, elder people in the community, and to teach family life at its best. The other thing we need God back in schools. I think that's one of the greatest things that is missing. We have to bring God back into the schools. Further than that, we need to have a very serious boot camp. Ready children, young people that are bad behaved, should be able to be taken from their parents and put in this boot camp and get some serious example of life, get up and making your bed, exercising, and still educating them to be useful, but bring them from the society. I don't know what your feeling on that.
Well, sir, the challenge, there are a couple challenges that over a period of time, I must admit that I've been strident on. One is the fact that the institutions that we once held dear have been diminished in their stature over a period of time. Boy Scouts were seen as a place to get discipline, to learn camaraderie, team spirit, and some of the things you mentioned, making up your bed, fixing yourself a cup of tea, making a sandwich, cadets, the various drills, your respect for elders and authority, Sunday school, how to deal with your fellow man. Over a period of time, all those institutions have found themselves in the pages of the newspaper in not a good way. Abuse by pastors, money grabbing and laundering, fornication, adultery, carrying rape people, wife and girl children. We have undermined the institutions that we were taught to respect. And that's why I made the comment to the first caller that it is not an issue of fixing the children. If you send me to a boot camp or you send me to any training institution and I come back home to warring parents, lack of respect for me.
Bad influences.
How am I going to respect my mother if she has no respect for me?
That's
how am
true.
I going to respect my father if he has no respect for me? A child made a comment to me about that matter of respect, and as I said, I looked at them in a completely different light after they made it.
Yeah.
If you have a situation where when daddy goes overseas on business, Uncle George comes in on Monday at midnight and leaves at 3 a.m. Uncle Harry sneaks in at 1:15 and leaves at 4:45. You know, mommy goes out and comes back at 3:00, 4:00 in the morning, no from not where. Or if mommy is out, Auntie Joyce comes in, Auntie Brenda comes in. That child is not going to have any respect for either mother or father, or for themselves
right,
for that matter.
Have,
and when Uncle George pulls at the stepdaughter or, you know, Auntie whoever pull at the young son, where is the respect going to come from? We pretend a lot that we are shocked when we hear about children behind the canteen or children in a bus, and you go, oh my goodness, shush, look at them, these bad people. And then what? I mean, there was a situation in Trinidad over Carnival, picture in the newspaper, 37-year-old woman jumping behind a music truck with a six-month-old. It wasn't a child, you know, it was a grandchild. Her daughter, 23, was jumping in the band with her three-year-old child. The mother, the grandmother is 37, the child is 23. Graham Vaughan is looking at me as though I jumped out of a truck. So she was jumping with her grandchild in a band. And her response to the newspaper was, all you keep all your mouth out of my business, this is my business. Now, I have no problem with families playing together. I have no problem with families playing mass together. But if that is the attitude of a 37-year-old grandmother, it shows you that there is a prevalence of behavior that says authority can't tell me what to do. So how are you going to try to fix the three-year-old child or the five-year-old child that decides to not respect authority? It can't start with them. So the challenge is that we have to take a serious look at the institutions, how we respect our institutions, and how they present themselves to be respected. That's the problem. It has to start there. Yes, sir.
And one other point I want to pass by you. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we in Barbados at the hospital is using TPA, a drug that does wonders for stroke victims. If you can get to the hospital 4 hours within that time frame, they give this injection and it absorbs the clot and all your limbs and everything almost respond right away. It's very successful in dealing with stroke victims.
I will ask my pharmacist if we have it here, so I'm sure she can advise me. She advises me on most things. Good hearing you, sir. This is Dr. Brass Tacks. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi, sir.
How are you doing?
I am having a little difficulty today, but I am good.
Yeah, I'm going to be very sharp. But I heard two documentaries on BBC recently. I know you're talking about children. One of the requests or one of the recommendations they made that they want to get the communities in England at least to have all the children playing together at least for 2 hours because there's a problem with socializing. I don't know if that has anything to do with what is happening today, where you're having these built-up areas where people just pass each other and it's this social connection. But that came out of England pertaining to finding.
You know, and you know what's interesting? These built-up areas are supposed to have, what they call it, communal facilities, some place where people could recreate themselves and be together. But, you know, sometimes they don't work, I guess.
All right. Another one that I heard that really drove me to think that Pakistanis or Islams don't really appreciate dogs. Have anything in terms where they see that community here in Barbados? You ever see any of them with a dog?
I don't look at communities like that, so I don't know.
But no, I tell you what I heard
I don't know.
BBC. That these Pakistanis don't deal with dogs because a young lady would say, she had to hide a dog from the family get together, and unfortunately, the dog barked. But that's only what I heard on CBC.
Okay.
I mean, on BBC.
Okay.
So now I want to deal with this stage. I'm not dealing with politics, I'm dealing with this stage. Now, recently, we were getting some hammering from people who talk about regular callers, this take up people thing. Dennis, if you don't explain to people propaganda, they run fast. Dennis, all of the regular callers have to call the same way as anybody else. No preferential treatment is given to a regular caller. Dennis, you know, sometimes I tell you, man, I was holding on too long. I had to go. And I would like you to explain to these people who are spreading propaganda, saying about the regular callers, stop them from calling. Sometimes I know when there's no callers on the station.
happens to me regularly.
Admit you moderators work harder than ever. Talk, you have to come here talking.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how people could come to propaganda, use propaganda telling people, but regular callers stop them from getting in, and regular callers will let other people get in. That is nonsense. I will let you to explain to the people how the radio station runs. We have, as we get in, we have to wait like anybody else.
Sir, I have even taken pictures of what our telephone looks like and posted it when I have seen some of the comments, because there are people who try to beat the system because of the way we used to operate when we had seven different lines. So they would hang up or go off the line during the news and then call back when the news is about to end and say, I won't go on next. I tell them it doesn't work that way. The board, when a call comes in, the light goes on to green. When you answer it, it goes to yellow. The person who's online is on red. When you hang up, the call that came in after yours automatically turns green. The person operating has to do nothing except open the line. They don't juggle. They don't twist. There's someone who wrote a big, long email telling me how I'm what? I'm the czar of VOB, and I victimizing them and all sorts of things. And I just say, you know, well, if that's what you think. So, look. Let me say to you, I've been sitting in this chair since 1994, and we've had the cement man, we've had the corned beef man, we've had the pastor from Bay Street, Pastor Willoughby from St. Philip, we've had Mr. Submission. They called regularly. You knew their voices. They had their particular moderators they would call, Father Hatch, Elombe, and these callers have been part and parcel of the Brastax family from as far back as I can remember. So we got new callers today. We got different voices that we hear on a regular basis.
Yeah, let me finish this call.
That's you know, the way the call
you,
works.
You know my business. I got it wrong, but let me finish on this here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I hear people doing this to VOB, how do you think, when I listen to VOB, VOB is the number one station. How do you think it get there? And when you talk about programming, Brastax is the number one program.
It is.
It would therefore mean that the regular callers made a significant input that got people listening to this program. And let me see if I can help to advise David, since he likes a lot of balance. He has an opportunity as manager. Mm-hmm. If the DLP callers believe that people who call against the DLP is given a break over the others. Let him set aside Monday when he on and Friday when he on. It's just be a DLP callers to call.
Don't do that to David. Let me say to you that David is not a fixture on either Monday or Friday, because as you can see, today is Monday and he's not here. The duties of program of station manager will from time to time take him out of the chair. And this is my job. This is what I do. I produce Brastax and I host whenever I'm asked to host. I was waiting on the ball to turn. I knew it was going to turn sooner or later. Look, the balance, as David says, often comes from the callers.